Hey, everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned into the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most impactful tools within their success portfolio. Today, I'm welcoming back the first guest to ever share his success portfolio, David Rozelle. On David's first appearance on the show, he also shared with us how failure is not an option in regard to retirement, and he motivated us to do ordinary things extraordinarily well. Let's head on over to the interview. David, welcome back to the show.
Eric, it's great to be back on your show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, it was exciting I love having people back. It's great. You know, you see a familiar face, and now we're doing video, so we get to produce this content for everyone. And, you know, David, before we get started with diving into your new book and how to turn like an unwanted life insurance policy into serious cash, that's such an interesting concept. But before we do that, let's go back in time to episode 45 when you shared your success portfolio. Now, if you're new to the show listening, let me give you some quick background on what a success portfolio is. So the best comparison that I could think of when I started it was, you know, think of an investment portfolio. So that compilation of those investments, it lays that foundation and framework for the financial goals in your life. And here on the Eric Mueller Show, I want to discover how successful people like David invest in themselves and build that foundation for their overall success. So David, the last time we talked, the foundation of your portfolio was persistence and gratitude. You had a gratitude journal that you did 5 minutes in the morning, and then you had the later part of the evening where it was, hey, what are the three things that happened today, the three greatest things, and then what's something you learned today? And I really like that, but now is your chance, man. Are there any changes, any additions, any modifications that you want to make to your success portfolio?
Well, I've implemented that for quite a few years ago, and I really believe that what we think about expands, and the more grateful that we are about the things that we have in our life, the more of that expands. I also carry a stone like this one. This is a rose quartz, which I call my gratitude stone, and I have it in my pocket with me during the day. And the way I use that is in the morning, right before I'm on my way to work, and I'm putting my wallet in my pocket, my cell phone, and my car keys, I grab that stone and just take 30 seconds and say, what am I grateful for right here and right now? And then I just put it back in my pocket, and it just raises my vibration. And during the day, if ever there's a stressful moment or anything like that, I'll reach into it and just grab it. It's a reminder to put things in perspective and get grounded. And then at the end of the day, I dedicate another 30 seconds. I'm taking my wallet and my cell phone and my car keys out of my pocket to put on my desk. The last thing I grab is this little stone. And I say, what am I grateful for today? I was on the Eric Mueller Show. I had a new prospect in the office today. I got some exercise in. And then I just put it down on my desk. And investing that 1 minute a day, in addition to the 5 minutes of the gratitude journal, and it's called the 5 Minute Gratitude Journal, and you can find that on Amazon. It really has made a significant impact in my life.
Yeah, I think that just that intentional aspect and that reminder, that like catalytic mechanism that stone is for you, you know, you have to have something that can prompt that, or at least I would think it'd be easy to get caught up in the you know, hustle and bustle of life, and you know, a day goes by and you don't think of what you're grateful for. It'd be easy for me to do that. I use an app on my phone, and you know, I kind of like checking things off on to-do lists. And a previous guest of mine, Janan Sarwar, really got me hooked on this Todoist app. And you just, you know, kind of, you can build, you know, points up for the things you accomplish. And I think that having something to be a catalytic mechanism for you is important. Have you found with your journey in regard to that success portfolio and being grateful, have you found that's gotten easier over time? Are you able to, like, if you were to not have that stone with you for a period of time, a week, do you think you'd still be able to remember to do that as you grab your keys and wallet? Is it so ingrained in you at this point?
I would say it is. It is. But it being grateful sometimes takes work for the best of us. And I think having the symbolism of that in my pocket is just, it triggers me. It reminds me because you are emptying your pockets at the end of the day. So you're forced to take it out. But yeah, I think, you know, they say it takes 21 days to form a habit. And if you've been doing it for more than 21 days, I think it starts to become ingrained in you. I do know that when I speak around the country and I'm talking about living the life you've imagined in retirement years and some financial strategies to help do that, at the end of the talk, I always mention about my thoughts on the difference between being rich and wealthy. Richness comes more from the size of your retirement accounts and your savings accounts. And being wealthy comes more from your heart and your happiness, because we all know people that have accumulated lots of riches, but they're not happy and they don't really have that wealth. And then also Absolutely. The other way around. And what I've been doing for years now is I talk about how I use my gratitude stone, and I pass out stones to anyone that might like one in the audience. And people don't really remember so much what you say, especially when it comes to finances, but they remember how you make them feel. And I would say people remember the gratitude stone and the story on that more than anything else I share with them.
Yeah, it reminds me. I mean, that's something that I think back to, like, elementary school with the teachers. You know, that's something that's, I think, said to kids at that age too. It's you might not remember what they've taught you, but you'll remember how they made you feel. And so I think that's a great example, really lays the foundation for another interesting piece of the success portfolio that makes up David Rozelle. And let's get into this topic about life insurance, David. So your book, In the Know, Turning Your Unneeded Life Insurance Policy into Serious Cash, you wrote it with your business partner, Rodney Cook. Start us off with that. Give us just a brief 10,000 foot view of what that book is and why it's so important for us to know, you know, as people that are trying to build the next best version of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, first of all, my partner Rodney and I are firm believers in life insurance. When it's needed, it is a way to really make an impactful way in people's lives. What we found over the years is as people approach retirement, very often they no longer have a need for the policy that earlier in their lives was extremely important. And there's a number of different scenarios in life insurance where it's no longer wanted or needed by people. And it could be that the policy is no longer affordable, because in a lot of policies, as you get older, the prices go up. And lots of times you bought it for your children to replace your income if something happened to you. And now your children are out of the house and they're even more successful than you are. And there's no need for it for those reasons. Speaking of my business partner, Rodney, we have life insurance on each other in case something happened to one of us. We'd be able to buy out our estate, we'd be able to buy out the other person's shares. And a fourth reason is that, let's say a lot of people get it for estate tax purposes, so their kids aren't burdened with paying that estate tax. And now the exemptions are so high that less than 1% of people even have an estate tax. And so over the years, we've learned that it's possible to take these unwanted or unneeded life insurance policies and actually sell them when people meet the right criteria. And it's interesting that, basically shockingly, that up to 90% of life insurance policies never end up paying a death benefit. They either expire or they lapse or they're surrendered. And each year, more than $112 billion of life insurance is allowed to lapse or be surrendered. And now we want to educate the public that there is another option, and that is that these policies potentially can be sold for some serious cash.
Yeah, that's such an interesting concept. And let's take just an example of a hypothetical person. Let's say a guy named Matthew or a girl, you know, named Sabrina. Let's just take two of them. They're about 32 years old. You know, they've got kind of a steady job. Maybe they're married, maybe they're not. But they're kind of clueless in regard to life insurance. They think they have one. You know, maybe they have one set up when they were younger. But they're wondering, what is one thing that they should know about it? What is one thing that they should know about life insurance going forward? And, you know, how do they know maybe when they've reached the point where they no longer want or need it? That might be kind of like a second part of the question, but What's the number one thing you'd say we need to know about life insurance starting off?
Well, when it's needed, it is very powerful. All the things that'll never happen to us in our lifetime do happen to people dying prematurely. And for a younger couple in their 30s, especially if they have children, I believe that they have a responsibility to the children that they brought onto this earth to make sure that they're okay if something happened to mom or dad. And it's basically paying pennies now to have dollars later. And especially when you're talking about term policies, which is basically renting a policy for a 10, 20, or 30 year period of time, it's a very inexpensive way to bring peace of mind while you're alive. And God forbid if something happened to you, to really help the family financially.
Well, and I think too that it's probably, you know, you and I kind of joked about this in the pre-interview discussion about, you know, that life insurance probably is not the most exciting topic for someone to think about. Or hopefully you're listening to this episode because you're intrigued about, you know, it's like selling a life insurance policy. That's kind of a foreign concept to me. Wasn't something that really entered my mind space until I had, you know, one of your agents reach out about it. And it made me think, David, what would be a scenario where you would know that it's that you're able to sell it, or you've reached the point, you've got some criteria that make you think you don't need it anymore. How the heck does someone go about selling a life insurance policy? Is there a marketplace, or do you contact someone that's, you know, able to do it for you? I guess what would be the steps there?
Yeah, well, most people, including estate planning attorneys and CPAs who advise their clients on life insurance, aren't aware that there's this fourth option of selling the policy. Generally, selling a policy is for people that had a policy. It was really important at one stage. Usually it's in their later years, they're in at or near retirement. Their health may not be as good as it was earlier on. And instead of just surrendering the policy and walking away with either nothing or a small cash value, potentially they can walk away with some serious cash. It's referred to as a life settlement. And basically, that's the sale of existing life insurance policy. And it's often to an institutional investor. They're purchasing these life insurance policies, thousands of them, almost forming their own mutual fund of life insurance policies. And the people that are buying them, they're basically pension funds, hedge funds, and even banks. And the policy goes up for sale more than its cash surrender value, but less than the death benefit. And the person that's selling their policy receives a lump sum cash payment. But once the policy is sold, the buyer becomes the owner of the policy, and they're the ones who are starting to make the premium payments. And when the person dies, who's the life insurance is on, it's that pension fund or bank that purchased the policy that now collects the death benefit. And it's important to keep in mind when these policies are purchased, they go into a blind trust to make sure that there's confidentiality.
Would you say that it's possible for someone just like a personal investor to do this? If someone was interested in going out and trying to form their own mutual fund per se and you know, really try to start a side business, would that even be possible? Or are there regulations? I guess that's kind of where my entrepreneurial mind goes with it, is you think of a vehicle now that I was unaware of. Probably a lot of you listening are in the same boat as I am. You didn't realize you could sell a life insurance policy. But is it something that people could make money on, David? Or am I thinking about it in the wrong way? Is it more something that you should think of for your own self as you get older, what you might do with your own? Is that a better way to look at it?
Well, I very much appreciate your entrepreneurial mind, and I do think anything's possible, but it's a very regulated industry. So we have to be licensed for life settlements, any state that we're doing this. And the thing to keep in mind is that they're very complex transactions that require a team effort and a considerable amount of time. We're going out there and putting these policies out for auction, and we're reaching out to all the different companies that purchase life insurance. and we're seeing where we're getting the highest bid. And then once we receive that highest bid, we go back to the same companies and say, this was the highest bid. And very often we're going through multiple rounds of this auction to help ensure that we're getting the highest price for the client. When you're purchasing life insurance, it can take as little as a few weeks until you own that policy. When it comes to selling a policy, it could take 4 to 6 months. So there's lots of considerations when debating whether or not to sell your policy and how much you're spending on premiums and whether you still need that policy. But once that decision has been made that you no longer want or need that policy, there's a lot of time and effort that goes into selling it.
Yeah, I appreciate you shedding some light on that. So it's definitely a lot more complex and a lot more regulated than just setting up a stock trading account and going on there and searching for policies or looking on an open marketplace per se. That's something that doesn't exist. So it's good to know that. I'm glad to hear that. I think one thing that's probably on a lot of people's minds is, what are some of the reasons that you would know you no longer need it or want it? You shared earlier, if a couple is older, they're at or near retirement, they have some children that are now out of the house. Their kids maybe can financially support themselves. Perhaps they're even taking mom and dad out to dinner now and treating them. But specifically, are there a few reasons that you can think of where we would know we've reached a point where we don't need our life insurance policy anymore?
Kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but when your kids are grown up, you have it to replace them. They're grown up and you no longer feel you need that policy. Lots of people, business partners are buying it and then they sell that company and that they have a policy that the business owns, but it's no longer needed. In most cases, they're going to just surrender the policy. And with all the moving parts, there's really three options that people have been aware of all these years and that they've been guided on from their professionals. And one is you can either keep the policy and if premiums are going up, you just deal with it. You can decrease the death benefit and make the premiums more affordable if the cost has gone up as you age, or you can let the policy lapse. And most people aren't aware of that a life insurance policy, just like your home, automobile, boat, your investment portfolio, your investment real estate, and even your business, that life insurance policy is considered a capital asset. And so often life insurance companies don't even want you to be aware that it's a capital asset that could be sold. They'd rather it be surrendered. But it's an asset that could potentially have significant value.
Is there any way to think about it in regard to net worth? Is there any way to encompass that into the calculation when you talk about someone's net worth? Should they be including it? If you mention that it's an asset, is that a way to think about it, or is that not? Does it not really plug in an easy calculatable way in that case?
Well, for most people, keeping the policy makes sense. They got it for a reason, and they still have a need. And then with financial planning, we're building that in that if that policy or when that policy owner dies, because there's 100% chance we're going to die in this lifetime, we're building that into the plan. That the surviving spouse will inherit those tax-free dollars from the death benefit. The only time that we're adding it in the net worth, since most people that sell their policy are 60 years or older, their health has declined somewhat since when they first bought that policy. And when we're selling these policies for these people, those unexpected funds that come in, because most people weren't aware that they could sell the policy and they were going to walk away with little or nothing. And they could potentially walk away with some serious cash. And when that policy is sold, we're building that into their financial plan to help increase their retirement income.
And how do the taxes work on that, on a sale like that? Are you taxed at a certain rate or is it taxed over time? Or I guess, honestly, as a person that's relatively naive to life insurance in general, educate us there, David, as far as how, when you sell it, how do taxes work?
Yeah, well, it's important to be aware of all the transaction costs when there's a life settlement. So first of all, you do have taxes, and I dedicate half of a chapter in the book to how the taxes are calculated. You do pay taxes on it, and there's a intricate way that they figure that out that I think you'd rather watch paint dry than hear how that works. But keep in mind, a chunk of that will go to Uncle Sam. On top of that, the industry average for doing this entire transaction and taking the 4 to 6 months that it takes and creating the demand and putting it out to bid, on average, about 30% will come out as far as the transaction fees. But the thing to keep in mind is that when most people learn that their life insurance policy could potentially have value, and they were getting ready to walk away with either nothing or the small cash value in that policy, it's really free money. And I always like to say that 70% of something is better than 100% of nothing.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I thought right when you were saying that, I was thinking the same thing. It's like, well, if it's either useless or it potentially has some use for you in a monetary sense. And if you think of it in terms of like an investment that you're making when you get a life insurance policy, obviously it has the benefit of being there if you should need it, if something were to happen. That's, you know, the kind of the fail safe of why you would want it. But does it operate somewhat like, you know, an asset or an investment that is, it's going to appreciate in value over time? If someone gets one when they're 20 versus 30 versus 40, it's going to be more valuable over time?
Well, the only thing that makes it valuable is when you think about the investor who's purchasing the policy. They're buying it for X amount of dollars. And as grotesque as it sounds, they're hoping that that person passes away sooner than later because they're going to collect the death benefit. You're getting rid as the policy owner, getting rid, selling the policy because you no longer have a need for it. So the older that you are, the less, the shorter your time horizons of life, and the worse that your health is, the more value that policy has. So again, the only time we're implementing a life settlement or the sale of a policy is only for when people we're going to walk away from the policy. And if their CPA or their attorney says, wait, I want to introduce you to Roselle Wealth Management before you walk away and really learn the pros and cons of all four options, and that fourth option, selling the policy, makes sense. There's a lot of, we need to make sure that we can get significantly more than the cash value.
Yeah, and just to recap, David, to make sure we're on the same page here, and this, you know, without giving away the book completely, but there's the four options you mentioned. You can keep it, you can reduce the death benefit, you can let it lapse, or you can go the implementing the life settlement. Those are the four best options. Those are the four only options. Is there any other way someone could go with it?
No, those are really the four options that people have when it comes to the policies, with existing policies that they're not happy with. And again, in most cases, being a firm believer of life insurance, it is the most incredible way to pay pennies now to get dollars later for the family. And this is only for when people no longer want or need that policy. But it's amazing how many people are at or near retirement, and this will pertain to them.
A couple questions that came to my mind. The first one, kind of an exciting question for those of you listening. How much are we talking here, David? What's the dollar amount that you would make selling it, you know, as like a 65-year-old person when you realize you don't need it at that point in your life?
Well, you know, every case is so different one from the other. Probably the best way I can share, and you know, it, throughout the book in every chapter, it's a short book, we share real life case stories. And of course, we change people's names for confidentiality. But I'll share, it's an interesting story. Larry and Liz, were household names on the Oregon coast. Back in 1968, they opened up a whale watching tour company because every summer the whales come from Mexico and come back up to beautiful Oregon here.
It's a long way.
It's a long way. Yes. Interestingly, in Alaska, a lot of them come from Hawaii and go back and forth. Sadly, Liz died unexpectedly due to health complications back in 2012, and Larry's spirit diminished, as one can expect, and his visions for retirement were completely altered. And he ended up, his heart just wasn't in the business anymore, and he ended up selling his business to one of his employees for much less than it was really worth, and certainly less than what he had hoped for. Right. Now jump ahead, and Larry's 88 years of age. And originally he purchased this policy decades ago, because at that time when there was going to be an estate tax, when both of them were no longer with us, and he didn't want his kids to have to pay that tax. So he leveraged this life insurance policy so that it would pay out tax-free to the kids. And he didn't want Uncle Sam to become his primary beneficiary. Well, back in 2012, the estate tax exemption was just over $5 million. That means when the second spouse died, they'd add up all their assets, and everything above just over $5 million got taxed at 50%. And now you jump ahead to 2023 right now, and it's $12 million, just over $12 million per person. And so well under 1% of Americans will ever have an estate tax due. So he realized that he no longer needed these policies, because he wasn't going to have an estate tax. And in addition, now that he's older, the cost of the policy was increasing to $133,000 a year. $133,000 a year. And this was for $1.2 million, actually $1.6 million coverage. So this was his financial advisor in Newport, Oregon, referred Larry to us so we can share with him all the four options that he had. We worked with multiple providers to negotiate settlement offers. And through the auction process, we were able to procure $975,000 for his $1.6 million death benefit. And this was $842,000 more than his cash surrender value that he was going to walk away with.
Goodness.
It was an incredible windfall for him, especially for a policy that he was going to walk away with just the small cash value. And on top of that, Eric, he no longer needs to pay his $133,000 of premiums. And of course, you know, this doesn't bring Liz back and that loss that he has in his life, but he's a huge lover of golf, and out with this money and bought one of those Mercedes-Benz golf carts. So it's kind of one of my favorite stories that's come out of life settlements.
That's an awesome story. And yeah, like you perfectly stated, I mean, obviously it can't bring that person back, but what he's able to do, you know, with that is a lot more than what he would have been able to do if he would have taken the cash settlement. What would we be talking with that? Or the, you know, if he was to take that route instead, you know, you're talking over $900,000, almost $1 million to go your route. What's that smaller amount? I mean, is it just infinitesimal comparatively?
Well, he was going to walk away with the cash surrender value, because that this was the type of policy that built up cash. And it was just over $130,000. And he was able to walk away with $975,000. Keep in mind that he had to pay tax on that, and he had to pay for the transactional fees. But still, he walked away with a tremendous amount of money that he considered, again, was free money, because he had no idea at the time that his life insurance policy was actually a capital asset that could get him some serious cash.
And on the flip side of it, let's take that same person, same situation, even with, you know, the loss of a spouse at, you know, 10 years ago from right now, roughly. What would make that story different, in which case it would not make sense for them to sell that policy? Is there a way to explain it in that route? I'm just trying to think, for people listening, when they're trying to think later in life, have they reached a point where it makes sense? Are they at a point where it doesn't make sense? Obviously, a person like yourself, David, would be able to take them on as a client and hold their hand through it and be able to advise them accordingly. But are there some features of that story that could easily be changed that would make it so that it wouldn't make sense for him to go that route?
Well, if he had tried selling it back in 2012, when Liz had passed away, he was that much younger. And his policy may or may not have been viable on the open market, because the people that would be buying the policy would have to be paying these premiums on his life for another decade. And if they were willing to buy it, it would come in at a lot lesser cost or lesser amount than the $975. So when companies are looking at purchasing policies, again, some of the things they're looking at is the age of the person who owns the policy, their current health, their time horizons, how much the premiums are, because they're going to be having to take over those premiums. But before we put a policy up for sale, we're able to let a person who's contemplating selling their policy, give them a rough amount of what we think it'll be out on the open market.
Would you say that, is there an average number that, you know, as far as take home, just an average, you know, you pay all the associated fees, the lump sum that you actually receive in your bank account, is there an average number that you've seen in doing this and helping people out?
No, there's no average number, because there's so many different variables. The size of the policy, if it's a $5 million policy versus a $500,000 policy, the age, you know, all the moving parts and their health. To help give people an idea, in every chapter of the book, I do share another case study just to give people an idea of how these work. And in many cases, they don't work. Well, we'll share with them, you know, the bad news is your policy is not viable on the open market. The good news is you're healthy and you've got a lot of time horizons left. So let's look at the other three options that you have and look at the pros and cons of those options and come up with a viable solution that you're most comfortable with. So it's not just all about selling a policy. It's about doing an audit on an existing policy that may no longer be wanted or needed. In that unique circumstance, sharing the four options, the pros and cons in each. And now that client is equipped with knowledge. Knowledge is power, to make an informed decision that they're most comfortable with.
Yeah. And one thing I thought was surprising, David, that you shared with me pre-interview was that your book is the only book that addresses this topic. You're in a small, you know, you and Rodney are talking about this. Why is this not a mainstream thing? Why is this not something, aside from the fact that, you know, it's probably not in the best interest of those life insurance policy companies to advertise selling their services after they've sold them to you? But what makes it that you wanted to create this book? I mean, how did you get into thinking, aside from the fact that you're a strong advocate of having a life insurance policy, when did you realize that this would be an avenue to write a book and integrate further into your business on how to help people build wealth?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, what we found is we work with so many very talented CPAs and so many talented estate planning attorneys, and they do a great job of guiding their clients. And very often the clients would go to these professionals and ask them and say, hey, we bought this policy X amount of years ago. We had a need for it then. The premiums have increased so much. We no longer have any need for this policy. What should we do with it? And guess what you think? Guess what the answer would be from the CPAs and the estate planning attorneys?
Would they say just let it lapse?
Yeah. Let it lapse. If there's cash surrender value, grab that. You don't need it. Why be paying premiums for something you no longer need? And you think, yeah, that makes sense. And what we've come to realize is that most professionals, most of the public out there, are unaware that life insurance is a capital asset. And when it's appropriate, only when it's appropriate, and the person no longer needs or wants it, and a life settlement is viable, it makes such a positive impact on people's lives. So Rodney and I had the goal of writing this first book on life settlements. It's a short book. Let's make it kind of fun as well, which is what we like to do with all of our books. and use real life case studies so that not only the professionals out there, but the public are aware of this option.
Yeah, I think that's a great service. And it really, I feel like, you know, in talking to you the last time, it perfectly integrates with just the mindset you have in regard to retirement and the thought process that goes into, you know, just talking to people that are my age. I think it's such an important point to drive home that it's not something we necessarily want to think about. It's not necessarily something that could be fun to think about, but the fact that you're making it fun, telling stories, giving real life examples, showing people that there is other options, you know, cash surrendering value versus life settlement. I mean, you think 95% of the CPAs out there would say that that's what they would recommend. If you don't need it, they would say, let it lapse. And if there is some type of cash surrendering value to grab it, if not, just, you know, call it a loss. I mean, all those years you've paid in premiums, that was just money invested in case you ever needed it. Is that how they would view that, do you think?
Yeah, it's no different than for those that own a home, they wouldn't be able to sleep if they didn't have insurance on their home. If God forbid it got damaged or burnt down to the ground. And when you sell that house and your home didn't burn down, you're not angry that you've been paying all those premiums that year. You had, you know, all those years, you had peace of mind. And so having peace of mind from owning life insurance when you need it, especially in your younger years, is so important. And like I said earlier, I think it's a responsibility that we have. And when and if we get to the stage where that due to changes of circumstances and that policy is no longer needed, you had it for those years for the what ifs, you luckily did not need it. And now it's about making the best decisions possible moving forward.
Yeah, it just kind of brings back that unpredictable aspect of life in general. You shared with that story earlier. Now, obviously, that wasn't on their radar to think that the one of those spouses in that couple would pass away prematurely. And so that's something that it's a scary aspect to think about in some ways, but it's also coming full circle back to the first episode that I had with you. It's just having that mindset of that forward thinking process of being prepared, being educated. You know, the three books that you have now, and we'll tag all those in the show notes. You know, the one on the life insurance we'll have on the top for easy access for people, but it's just, it makes so much sense to become more educated in these things like wealth management, as we talked about earlier, retirement, failure's not an option, all those things that are deeply ingrained in my mind now. And those of you listening, hopefully it is. If not, go back and listen to episode 45. But now with learning how to sell something like a life insurance policy, just talking to you today, David, you know, flash forward 50 years from now when I'm 80 years old, I'm going to remember that. I see life insurance, or I'll think of something in regard to, you know, estate planning, and I'll be able to transport myself back in time and think, oh my gosh, we have to think about, like, this is going to be an idea that we're supplanting in the minds of the listeners, and you're doing with your book and the people that read it and share it. You're having that ripple effect that you're making a positive impact on people. And I think that's really inspirational. Brings back to the success portfolio that you shared, and being the first guest to share that, I think that's also, you set the tone well with, you know, gratitude and persistence. I think those are two core values that you should have in everyone's success portfolio. And as we close today, David, I just want to ask you one final question. Is there a big misconception or myth about selling a life insurance policy that you want to debunk on the show? Is there something that we haven't discussed yet that you just want to make sure that people are aware that that's not true?
I just think it's important for people, A, to be aware of it, B, to only go down this path if it's a policy that they truly realize that they do not need or want, realize that it's not something that happens easy. It's a time-consuming thing. We talked about that there's transactional costs, there's taxes and all that. But when it's used, just like any financial strategy, when it's used appropriately for the right people at the right time in their life, it could be a huge benefit.
I think that's a perfect summary. I think that's a perfect way to tie a bow on this episode. And if someone wants to reach out to you, David, and learn more about either what you do at Roselle Wealth Management or learn more about your books or something that we talked about today, what would be the best way for them to reach out and contact you?
Yeah, there's a number of ways. First of all, they're more than welcome to give me a call at the office, 541-385-8831. And our website is www.rosellwealthmanagement.com. And Rosell is R-O-S-E-L-L. And I didn't mention this to you in the pre-show, Eric, but any of your listeners that is interested in learning more about life settlements, I'm happy to get them either an ebook or actually a personalized copy of the hard book in their hands. I just think it's so important to get word out there. And we're even doing CE credits for attorneys and CPAs so they're able to learn more about this subject.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful, David. So generous of you. I appreciate that. I know you sent a copy to myself. And so I will now have two of your three books. I still need to buy the Millennials Financial Guide to Keep Climbing. I know I told you I'd do that last time, but I'm promising you now I'm going to go order that later today on Amazon. So we'll get that. You know, those are three additional pieces of educational tools that you can put into your physical portfolio to build toward success. And David Rosell, the founder of Rosell Wealth Management and the author of In the Know, Turning Your Unneeded Life Insurance Policy into Serious Cash. Can't thank you enough for being back on the show for the second time, and we'll maybe look forward to a third time in the future.
Eric, great to be on your show again. Thanks so much for having me.
You as well, man. Take care.
Take care.